there, and a very warm welcome to episode 3 of The Commentator's Curse. My name's Ian Danter. I've been lucky enough to go around the country and around the world doing football commentaries on radio for the past 20 years. And I meet so many wonderful curly people who do the same job as me, but an entirely different job at the same time. And that's what this show's all about. Not just to chat to them, but also to give people listening an idea of what it's like to inhabit this weird, weird world of football commentary, whether it's on the TV and on the radio. We do have an archive of episodes that I've put up already. Guy Mowbray and Ian Crocker was episode 1. John Champion and Nigel Pearson, not the Leicester manager, was episode 2. Feel free to subscribe and rate and review and all that malarkey, you know the drill. But let's get on with episode 3. I've got two great guests with me who I'm delighted to say are joining me right now. First of all, a kind of vague colleague of mine from TalkSport, although to call him a TalkSport pundit would be to do him a massive disservice because he has been a regular commentator on Bundesliga football for quite some time. And he used to work, he paid his dues in his days on Gloucestershire Radio, going up and down the motorways of this fine land. But now he's regarded by many as a serious European football expert. Kevin Hatchard is my first guest. Kev, how are you doing?
I'm really good. Thank you for having me on. This is a great honour, Dan. I'm delighted. Delighted.
And that wasn't even written down. I'm quite
no, you didn't even pay me for that bit.
That seemed to come from the heart. Be still. And my other guest is, well, a bit of a trailblazer. There's quite a few trailblazers in the world of female commentators. Of course, Jackie Oatley started the trend on Match of the Day way back when. But this lady who's with us today is part of the, if you will, the next generation of female commentators who are doing great work on Match of the Day, Women's Super League, and much more besides. But she too paid her dues in the Oxfordshire area of the UK when she was cutting her teeth as a young reporter stroke commentator. Robin Cowan is with us on the Commentator's Curse. Hello, Robin.
Hi, Dan. Thanks so much for having me. Still very much on the coattails, I'd say, of the trailblazers before me.
You see, this is the thing, because obviously the first two episodes of this show that I've done have been very much, I've had very much, you know, established name, like Guy and John Champion, who've, you know, done 20, 30 years, pretty much at the very top. But there is an intention, as I go on with this show, to kind of delve into the careers of people who, you know, have a, you know, different route and a different level, but are still clearly very content, it seems, at least outwardly, with where they are and what they're doing. You don't have to be the lead commentator on a terrestrial television channel to be happy with your lot, I think. That's the thing, isn't it? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're all far more ambitious than I think we are. But, you know, sometimes you realise the level of where it feels good, at least at a certain point in your life, Kev.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, you look at the route that I've gone down and what I do on the Bundesliga, that's my Match of the Day. So I'll have people who'll say to me, oh, so do you want to eventually do Match of the Day? And look, that is an amazing programme and that is a great honour to do something like that. But when I'm on the Bundesliga highlight show, which is effectively the German football version of that, I get the same buzz because European football is something I was into as a kid. You know, I watched the Borussia Dortmund teams and those massive Dayglo tops with the big C on the front, you know, watching Andy Müller and Karl-Heinz Riedler and all those guys. And so this is such a thrill and such a privilege to do. I did the Borussia Dortmund Hoffenheim game the other night, which was shown on Sky. And what you tend to have is that the stuff that I do goes all around the world and you'll get random people on holiday in like a bar in Cambodia or something. They'll send you a thing saying, oh, your game with Bochum was on Friday. And I'll go, oh, great. Okay. But to have it on a channel which a lot of friends and family can watch, that was a special moment there. So you kind of have special moments along the way. But yeah, very, very happy at the moment.
I completely agree because, when you first start, like I did Oxford City against Brackley on online commentary for Radio Oxford. And that was my Match of the Day then, you know, when you're first starting out, get really nervous. And you're thinking back now and you think, well, that was a bit silly when only, only my mum was listening. If that, you know, really, if she remembered. So, yeah, I think it is like that. Although of course, as you well know, dance in this industry, there are a few people who like to climb the greasy pole and would step over their own grandmother to try and get to the top. But I think that's probably not specific to this industry, is it? It's, you know, you get people like that in every sort of industry.
Well, I'm in a fairly unique position myself in that I've never done a television commentary in the way that you guys have. I've done the same thing to you, Kev, where I've done a Europa League game in a broom cupboard in Wimbledon, and somebody in Canada says, "Oh, I've just heard your commentary on Bent Spils against Heronvane. I'll smash in."
You know. Are you saying you weren't in Latvia dance that time?
Yeah, I don't know how he worked it out, but somehow it occurred to him that it all was not normal. But I've never done, you know, television commentary. And do you know what? You talk about the greasy pole, Robin. That's really interesting. It's never entered my thought process that that's something I somehow deserve or have a right to do. Or you know, you get what you earn in this business.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. No, you know, having, you know, spoken to you a few times, because you just meet people and they're just, I mean, and I'm one of them, you're just so grateful that you're doing this as an inverted commas job, because let's be honest, chaps, you know, we're not exactly down the mines, are we?
Nope. That's the exact phrase I use. That's exactly why I say we're not down the mines, are we, really? You know, this is better than a real job. So yeah, absolutely.
And you want to have that, you want to have a little bit of ambition, of course you do, everyone does, so, you know, and it's always nice to get that, I don't know, a more high, I don't even agree with this more high profile game or whatever. It's just great to be watching football and, you know, commentating on it. And that's the great thing about football. Even if it's two teams who are perhaps not most high profile, there's always something, isn't there? There's always a story. It is like a soap opera, isn't it, football?
As my boss used to tell me, every game is a unique sporting occasion. Don't you dare go into it thinking it's going to be like that game or this game. It's not. It's its own thing. And you make sure you're prepared for all eventualities. Let me go back to the beginnings then for you both. And I mentioned Gloucestershire for you, Kev, and Oxfordshire for you, Robin. Was that genuinely the get-go for you, Kev, working in the West Country?
Yeah, I mean, the get-go in a way was the big silver tape recorder that I used to grab and used to do fake commentaries in front of the TV. So I started doing that.
At what age?
About 13.
Okay.
So I decided, having listened to the dulcet tones of Barry Davis and Clive Tilsley, I thought, I fancy having a go at that. So I would sit there like a loon in front of the TV on my own with this big tape recorder, and I would do the game. I would do the game as if it was a proper game, and then would listen back to it and say, oh, didn't like that. So by the time I'd pestered Radio Gloucestershire enough to let me come in and make the tea and help out and do all that stuff, I'd done about 200 of these things on tape. And so every opportunity there was a game on, and there weren't as many games. We didn't have Sky at home. So every time there was a game on terrestrial, I would give it a go. So by the time I went in there, I was fascinated by the whole business. They were very kind to me. They were always lovely. A guy called Ian Randall, who was the sports head there at Radio Gloss, he was always very kind to me. Paul Furley, who's still there now. And they gave me a reporting opportunity. So I went to do Forest Green. So I started doing Forest Green games. I did Shortwood United in the first extra preliminary round of the FA Cup once against Highworth. And there were so few people there that the ball got kicked out of play. I was on a radio mic and I realized I was the closest and I was in the middle of a match report. So I had to sprint, and I'm not the greatest sprinter, I'll be honest. I had to go and sprint and get the ball halfway through a report. So that was live action, as live as it possibly can be.
I wanted to hear the next 3 minutes of commentary after that.
Yeah. Yeah. Hang my on. Fitness was as bad then as it is now. So yeah.
Well, talk about paying your dues. That's that is literally going the extra half mile.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what age did you actually start legitimately working for BBC Radio Gloucestershire? You can throw those tape machines away.
Yeah. So, I think when I did my first commentary, I think I was 20. I did Cheltenham at home to Rochdale. Mark Monnington scored twice, the centre-back, and Rochdale won 2-0. And so, it's one of those things, and I'm sure you guys will recognize this as well. The longer you're in something, and the more you become part of the furniture somewhere or what have you, and the more connections you make, like friends or just people you talk to, the more opportunities will come up. And they needed a commentator. They said, can you commentate? And I'd done these hundreds of games on the massive tape recorder. And we're still doing that. I mean, this is the ridiculous thing. I was still doing that in first year at uni. So I did go out at uni. That is true. That's a different podcast entirely. But there would be nights where people would go out and say, you coming out? And there'd be me with the tape recorder still doing games, because there was a midweek European game or something like that, which sounds like the saddest thing in the world, but all that eventually paid off. So when they asked me to do a commentary, I felt really comfortable and excited doing it, rather than this is something I definitely can't do. I ended up doing a couple of playoff finals at the Millennium, so that was amazing to do that, to do live commentary at the Millennium Stadium on a big playoff final was brilliant. And it kind of goes back to what we said before, you find thrilling moments in lots of different games, but you find kind of, it doesn't always feel like you're going up and up and up. Sometimes it's just lovely moments along the way. So a playoff final's thrilling. When I did my first Klassiker, Bayern against Dortmund, that was a real thrill. When I did the first Revere Derby, Schalke against Dortmund, that was amazing fun. But the ones that have really, really got me are the relegation playoffs, because they're the ones that really, really mean something. If you go down, people lose their jobs in the admin department, in the sales department. They're the games that really have a massive tangible impact. So they were amazing fun to do and a real honour.
Just on a tangent, sorry, Dan, just wanted to ask, do you think they could translate to our game in England, those relegation playoffs? I'm really interested in that.
The tricky thing has been that, by and large, the Bundesliga team stays up. That,
right.
So I like the idea of the playoff. What I'd prefer is a one-off game away at the second division side, because what tends to happen is over two legs, the Bundesliga side will muscle their way through, and it's very rare to see them get knocked out. And I just think in a one-off game where it's really the pressure's on, then I think you get more results where that Bundesliga team tumbles out. So I think if you were going to apply it to other leagues, I'd like to see it done like that, because there's too much advantage for the big boys at the moment.
The very early days of the playoffs in this country, there was something, it wasn't, the structure was a little more weighted that way. It wasn't necessarily relegation, but it was a much stranger, much more convoluted system when the playoffs were first introduced in this country in the 80s. But yeah, I think the genie's out of the bottle now. I don't think they can change it. I think it's too popular the way it is. That you know, the ratings that those games get, even the semi-finals. And you're dead right as well, Kev. Semi-finals of the playoffs. Those games, the jeopardy involved in those. Mentioning Forest Green, I did the Forest Green Newport semi-final in League
What
Two.
Terrific game!
Just an absolute crazy game of football.
Yeah.
In lashing rain, horrible weather, but utterly memorable. So you could take your Premier League game that weekend and shove it. It didn't hold a candle to Forest Green Newport.
But the playoffs have transformed that whole thing, because if you're battling for a top six spot, because otherwise if it's top three and the top three are miles away, season's dead, isn't it, really, for a lot of teams? Whereas I think that playoff element, I always think this about American sports, because with the NFL and the NBA, you're kind of in it more or less all the way through, apart from the teams who are really, really struggling. But I think baseball's totally different. It's like well over 100 games, and there's only I know they've slightly changed it now, but I just think if you've got like 80 games and you've got no hope of doing anything, it kind of wipes out the season, doesn't it, really?
Just means more prep for us, playoffs. Yeah. That's actually what it means. Just means more homework, one way or the other. Let's get to you then, Robin, because you mentioned that game, Oxford City against Brackley Town, commentating to two men, a dog and a can of beans. Oh, and your mum.
Possibly, if she'd know how to work the thing.
So how did you get to that point?
It was completely by accident. I think I'm probably quite a familiar story, because I had no even inclination of being a commentator at all. I just completed a law degree at Oxford Brookes University. So I was all set to go and do the sort of next bit and saw this thing on Twitter about all the local radio stations were doing sort of a sort of sports internship over the summer. I thought, oh, that looks like quite fun. See what happens there. And just sort of the sports editor there, Jerome Sale, he's still sort of my mentor, and he just saw something in me, and he kind of pushed me into doing reporting first. So yeah, updates, and then trying a bit of commentary. I think my first one was, it was at the Kassam Stadium, but it was Oxford United Women against Newcastle United Women in the FA Cup. And I don't know, do you guys ever listen back to yourself? Because I don't, because it makes me want to chew my own fist off in sheer embarrassment.
Sometimes I'm sent the highlights of something that I've done. My producer will just send them through so I can listen back just to the goal clips and make sure I'm at least getting the players' names right. Put the ball in the back of the net. Watch it. I don't think I could go back and listen to my early work. I mean, I probably started doing commentaries probably about a year or so before Kev did. So it's about 99 when I started doing commentaries for BRNB and Capital Gold up in Birmingham. So if I was to listen back to my first ever game, Walsall Chesterfield, I think I would I wouldn't give myself a second game.
Do you know what's funny though? So Paul Furley sent me through, this is a while ago now, but he sent me through, he was going through some archive and he found one of my really early games. And I listened to it and I sound so much posher than I do now.
Amazing.
I think in commentary I've found kind of just the voice. I mean, look, we all sound a bit different in comms than we do in real life.
I want to hear one of those tapes from when you were a kid though.
That's what I was going to say. Have you still got thousands of tapes somewhere?
Do you know what? The tapes are all at home somewhere. I don't think Mum and Dad have burnt them yet, so I'm going to have to dig them out. But what's really obvious when you listen to kind of the early stuff is I'm a total Barry Davis devotee. Like, I don't think I'm consciously trying to be him, but there's a bit of the kind of intonation there and a bit of the kind of... What I always loved about his stuff was the willingness to criticise players, not in a kind of mean way, but if they'd missed a really good chance, to go, oh dear, like that, like a real kind of, you really should, like a schoolmaster kind of thing. And so there's loads of that in my early stuff. It's hilarious.
I think that's interesting, isn't it? You know, you kind of, you latch on to, when you first start, you kind of latch on to maybe one commentator you really like, and then it kind of evolves, doesn't it? Because for me, I think it was just the sports editor, because I listened to him listened to him doing Oxford United commentary every week, and I always thought he was great. So I basically kind of imitated him to start with, and then you sort of start building and listening to other people and then kind of getting your own style, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
Barry Davis was definitely one for me, and David Coleman when I was growing up, because David had the voice of authority and it was minimalist commentary, never overdid it. Barry, you're dead right, Kev, about the schoolmasterly thing. I think one of his great moments was Japan 2002, when South Korea knocked out the Italians, and he absolutely berated the Italians. That's what happens when you don't make the effort. He absolutely lays them, gives them both barrels. I go on, Barry. You know, they need to hear this, because he was dead right. I couldn't argue with him. And this leads on to another point about us giving an opinion, because again, one of the things that Tom Ross, my mentor, taught me was, you're there to say what's happening. It's the bloke next to you with 50 international appearances and 300 club appearances. He says why, not you. You just say what's happening. And sometimes when you're doing a commentary on your own, you have to be where both.
Yeah.
But I'm very conscious of trying not to stray too far into the why and stick to the what. But it's a difficult line to walk, isn't it, guys?
I think it's really interesting, because maybe it's the raging egotist in me, but I actually do offer an opinion on that stuff sometimes. And I've had discussions with other people in the industry about this, who are very much of Tom's opinion and yours, Dance, that there is that clear delineation between the two. And I think, you know, it's obviously ridiculous for me to be overly explaining a tactical point when there's somebody next to me, but who has played, you know, 50 times for England or whatever. But I think if you make it part of the conversation and say, oh, they've switched to three at the back, why have they done that? Or if you notice stuff and bring that in. I think if it becomes more of a two-way conversation rather than saying, right, I shouldn't go anywhere near this stuff, I think that's absolutely fine. And I think because we've all done solo comps and you have to wear both hats, then you kind of get to the stage where just by nature, you're noticing things, you're bringing stuff in. And I've kind of been less and less worried about shying away from that kind of stuff as I've got older. And what's been quite cool is that recently I've done some stuff for UEFA where I've been the co-commentator, because UEFA on their Match Day Live program, they have a kind of European football expert in inverted commas, which is me apparently. And I come in, we talk about all the games, but they'll have a commentator like Mark Scott or Adam Summerton or Phil Blacker or Jackie has done some games recently as well, Jackie Oatley. And I'll do the co-coms and the tactics. That has been so much fun to do something like completely different and kind of realise that, well, I've watched hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of games. I kind of can see this stuff. And so when that's then your job, you kind of realise that you do spot patterns and see little things in game.
Yeah, I think I still feel a little bit uncomfortable doing that. Although when you do Match of the Day, obviously you do have to do a little bit of that. But I think like dance, because people know you, you do so many EFL games in particular that you, I think, if you offer an opinion, you've seen these teams, you know, over the seasons. It's kind of like, it's great to have a co-commentator. I much prefer that because that's almost your safety net, isn't it? Like, you know, if something goes wrong there, what went wrong, they can explain it. But I think, you know, I think with your experience, I think people are fine with you offering opinion. I'm still a little bit, I don't want to be too strident, I'd say.
Well, you see, I think Kev's point's very good about the fact that you can spot changes in formation or you can spot something during the course of your commentary. And you suddenly realise that somebody's switched flanks. You know, all the obvious things about positional changes and a slight structural tactical change, you can bring that up. And yes, I suppose there is a confidence that comes with seeing a team a lot over the course of a space of 2 months. There was a space early last season where I think I saw Bournemouth about four times in 3 weeks sort of thing. So, you know, you can't help but get that continuity of knowledge. But I am still conscious in a commentator and summariser format of not wanting to tread on the toes of somebody who could make exactly the same point as me in 10 seconds time, but in somebody like Perry Groves or David Connolly, make it a damn sight better than I do.
You know what's really funny is that, so I was in contact, Vicky Sparks was out in Tokyo doing some of the football commentary for the host broadcaster there. And I guess because of COVID restrictions, they had to do, the commentators were doing summarising as well. They were kind of switching. So I was watching one on the red button. I can't even remember what game it was. It was a women's game, but it was clearly two commentators because they were sort of trying to outstat each other during the game. And it was pretty obvious. And it was just, it didn't quite work. Because, yeah, and again, with local radio, if they can't get a summariser with them, I think they, you know, the co-commentator does half, well, this is why Radio Oxford do it. They do half the game and then they switch to doing summarising. And I did that a couple of times and I found that really hard, really difficult. But I think with Kevin, because you've got that sort of huge base of knowledge and you're dubbed the European football expert, it's almost like you can fit into that role maybe a little bit easier perhaps.
I think as well you become, that's very kind of you to say by the way, checks in the post, you know, nobody uses checks anymore, but there we go. I think as well, if you have a natural kind of, because I'm quite interested in all the tactical stuff, so I'll kind of, whenever there's a kind of assessment of a player or what have you, what do they do differently? And we've got all the kind of, I know people see it as the devil's work, but XG and all that kind of stuff. I do look at all that stuff now and kind of what's the quality of shot they're taking on, that kind of thing. And that can never replace the rest of the stuff. It can only be a string to your bow. If you're just constantly, and I'm sure we'll get on to that, but talking about stats versus stories and all that stuff. If it's just stat the whole time, doesn't matter how good the stat is, it is dry and it is dull and it's not really telling the story that you want to tell. But I guess it's just things. So that Dortmund game, I did it with Patrick Ovomiela, who used to play for Dortmund, used to play for Germany. Ovo's great. So it'll be little things like if a striker has had a shot saved. So there was Christoph Baumgartner, who plays for Hoffenheim. Really big chance late in the first half. Gregor Kobel, the Dortmund goalkeeper, comes out and makes a great save. I'll say to Ovo, should he have lifted that? Should he have tried to lift it? That kind of thing. So just little, that's not even a tactical point per se, but little things that I'll bring into a question. And I've got no problem with them saying no. Moritz Voltz, who he used to do games with all the time, would go, no, I don't agree with that at all. And I've got no problem with him shooting me down at all, because at least then it's a conversation. And in the part of it, you actually get the information across to the people at home that you want.
Stats. Look, we write them all down. And I've said it many times, I probably use about 10% of what I've written down to a commentary. I think stats is probably more useful in a TV format, because people are watching, they're taking in the game. When you're describing action, I think there's a, for me anyway, I just would far rather describe what's going on in front of my eyes on that bit of turf than what's written on the pad down in front of me. But maybe it's different for TV than it is for radio. But again, another great Tom Ross quote: if you want stats, buy a book.
That's yeah, that sounds like him. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. It's totally different, and I think if your talk sport listeners were listening to you reel off a load of stats as opposed to saying where the ball is, they wouldn't be very happy.
They go, who's this imposter? Well, to say that anyway. They just do it in block capitals, that's all.
Yeah. It's about what you're trying to say, isn't it? It's if you're trying to tell a story that a team is struggling at home and you say they've won one of the last 10 at home, they've scored 3 goals in that period and they haven't won at home since March or whatever, that's the story you're telling with those stats. If you're just... there are ones that I have a real bugbear about. I hate country-to-country stats. Oh, they've only won one of their last 7 trips to Greece. I don't care. Most of them were in the 50s. Who cares? Yeah. So stuff like that, head-to-head stuff, I find really dull. Like, oh, they've only won 20 of the last 60 games against them. Well, I mean, they're totally different teams. So I think stuff that's too historical, I'll move away from. But if it's
there
stuff
speaks a man. There speaks a man who writes for a betting website.
There's that as well. Yeah, that's true. But do you know what? The betting stuff's really interesting, because what it's done is it's really crystallized what's important. What are the stats that actually will make a difference to this game? What's relevant, rather than, oh, well, I haven't won on a Tuesday since March 2015. And it's like, well, nobody cares, really. So that has taught me more, the betting work, to kind of really strip away loads of stuff that's just not very interesting, really.
I think what you said, Dan's, about, you know, but you use about 10% of what you've written down is so, so true. I think with both, actually. And it is, when you first start out, you do feel like, but I've done all this work. I need to get it all out. Are you all out there? And then you realise, yeah, but it sounds incongruous if you try and shoehorn all these random stats into, or just, you know, try and get all of the information that you've written down into a game. It can sound a little bit forced, can't it?
Oh, it can sound so hackneyed. And you can just hear it a mile off. But there's ways, as Kev says, there's ways you can drop stats into a sentence as you're describing a piece of action, and it can sound, you know, relatively seamless and make sense and not sound like it's a complete handbrake turn in terms of your commentary. Speaking of handbrake turns, I'd like to get both of your stories about when your career did that handbrake turn and went from being, you know, the parochial Gloucestershire, Oxford, you know, massive that you were talking to, and when things went national or European in your case, Kev. What about you, Robin? When did it go to another gear?
Well, I think I feel I'm always going to say so very lucky that the women's game started. I was kind of on a crest of a wave when the WSL was formed, basically, in 2011, and so BBC Five Live basically said, well, we're going to start doing this. So doing a load of online games. So I remember my first Five Live Sports Extra commentary was the Merseyside Derby in the women's game.
Were you approached by Five Live or did you go to them?
So I think what happened was I applied for a job, which I didn't get because they said, well, actually, what you're doing at Radio Oxford is more relevant to what you want to do. So, because the job was sort of, I think it was like a bit of writing, a bit of reading bulletins, things like that. But they said, oh, you're a woman and you're commentating on football. So actually you should continue to do that, you know, honing your skills. And then they said, oh, actually we're doing a bit of women's football. So they kind of remembered me. And there were a couple of others like Vicky who were doing it as well in sort of local radio. So yeah, just really fortunate because I don't think if the WSL hadn't launched, I'm not sure if that would have happened. And so again, I'm sure you guys are the same. You kind of, with these low level, sort of low pressure games, not, you know, I felt pressure off of it. Obviously we always do want to do a good job, but you realize that you can kind of, in these sort of games where it's just an online audience, you can kind of make your mistakes there and learn on the job a little bit more as opposed to being thrown in at the deep end and ending your career or being cancelled or something. So yeah, I think that was the turning point. And then I think another one was when I did my first TV FA Cup. So a few years ago, I think the BBC got the rights back for the FA Cup. I think it was ITV for a long time, wasn't it? And then So I did a very early round of the FA Cup, Boreham Wood against Notts County. I can't remember when that was, but that felt like a big thing as well. So highlights of the FA Cup. So that was like the kind of move to sort of more television. And yeah, that was a big thing. It felt very special because that was, even though it wasn't Premier League match of the day, that was match of the day FA Cup. And it was, yeah, that was, felt very, yeah, very special.
Yeah, it's a feather in the cap, that, without question. It led to so much more, which we'll get to in a bit. How about you then, Kev?
So it's lots of sliding doors moments for me, I suppose. So the first of which would be the betting that you've mentioned. So I've worked for Betfair for a long time now, probably about 12 years now. And the reason that came about was a friend of mine, Alan Dudman, who works in racing. He does a lot of stuff for Ladbrokes now, and he's worked for Betfair for a long time, even longer than I have. He was banging on the door for me there to do some work for Betfair. And he said, look, he loves European football. He's covered it. And, you know, if you've got any opportunities. And it just so happened that the guy who was doing Bundesliga couldn't do it. They needed somebody at really short notice. So they got me to do it. So I was already then, I already loved the Bundesliga anyway, but because I was going to do this job doing tips and the column every week, I wanted to learn everything I possibly could, wanted to find everything out about every player, every club, history, all that stuff. So I kind of really dived into it. And then Tom Rennie, who Dance you will know, and Robin, you may know, he has run very successfully for a long time the international department at TalkSport, which is effectively a radio world feed. So the Premier League goes all around the world on radio, and that's been terrifically successful. So I started doing that. I started doing some Premier League games, and then we got the rights to do Bundesliga. And it was very small to start with. It was an American company called TuneIn who just bought these rights, and TalkSport said, well, we'll do them for you. We'll produce it for you. And so Tom said to me, well, you're the Bundesliga guy. You should do it. And so we did every individual TV time slot. And I did that for about 8 years. And because I was doing pretty much every Sunday Bundesliga, it turned out that the guys over in Cologne, who I work with on TV, were listening, unbeknownst to me. So they would have it on in the office. So John Hartley is my boss at the TV. He would be listening to it every Sunday. And so when they decided to expand the world feed on TV, which is about 6 years ago now, I think. Yeah, 6 years ago. They decided to expand it, and John gave me a call because I'd done a couple of podcasts with him and things like that, and said, look, I'd love you to come and try out for it. So I went over there and it went well, and here we are. I'm still annoying them 6 years later. So lots of little things. Had I not got into the league as much, that might have been a difference. Tom wouldn't have known that I did Bundesliga. If Tom hadn't brought me in the first place to do Premier League, that would have been different. If John hadn't listened to the stuff on a Sunday night, he wouldn't have known who I was really necessarily. So, yeah, you you know, you like to think you bring a lot of talent to it and what have you, but we all know there are little sliding doors moments along the way where things kind of fall into place.
A lot of people you have to send Christmas cards to, really. Yeah. Otherwise, you think they'll think, oh, he's forgotten about me. Oh, yeah.
But just be, I mean, this is another thing, and, you know, people might not think I'm nice, who knows, but just be nice. It's not that hard. Well, do you know what I mean? But in our industry is very small and relatively, and just be nice. And then that goes a long way, because if you're not, people find out and people go, oh, they're not very nice, I won't book them for this. Well, so just, you know.
I want to get onto this. And Robin, it's a fairly, it's a meaty topic to get into with yourself. Because obviously with the nature of social media being what it is, just being a female commentating on football creates its own groundswell of opinion. Mm. And I don't like what I read any more than you do. What worries me even more, and I don't know whether this you've even encountered this, is whether you encountered resistance in a press box, never mind from some bloke with an egg avatar on social media, you know, giving you both barrels. What have you experienced? Has it been uniformly good from your peer group since you started to climb and climb?
Do you know what? Generally, it has. It really has. I mean, you're patronised occasionally, but I think that's in terms of actual press boxes. That's about as far as it's gone for me.
Example of patronising with this.
Well, I remember going to Reading, and there was a kind of older gentleman who I think was a writer. And he was kind of talking to me about, I just, you know, you struck up a conversation, don't you, when you're eating. And he was kind of just running me through the team like I just kind of won a competition or something. And I got there, no preparation whatsoever. And I was just thinking, would you be doing this to a fella? Or maybe also because, I guess, I don't feel it anymore, but I'm relatively young-ish. So I guess maybe it's that as well. So it's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah, don't worry. You are.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Well, even I'm feeling like there's another generation of guys and girls in their 20s now. So, you know, it's the circle of life, isn't it? But yeah, it's more sort of being patronized, which I find quite funny. And also there's a few things where I'm a bit slow. So I don't realize it until kind of driving home. Like had to do, some occasionally after doing final score, I'd do post-match interviews with the managers, and the press officer would talk to the cameraman about what's going on and not me. But again, I didn't really notice at the time. I was driving home and I thought, oh, okay, so that was a bit sexist actually. But on the whole, dance, I feel like I've been really fortunate, because I think Kev's right. Generally, people are really lovely in our industry. I found anyway, generally, that they really are. That's what I've missed about, you know, during COVID times, not being able to gather in a press room and seeing this kind of familiar faces and seeing, you know, the same and, you know, catching up. And generally, it's been really welcoming. Social media is obviously a very, very different kettle of fish.
It is. How do you deal with that?
I have filters on my Twitter, and I'm not a very big, I don't tweet a lot on purpose because I know that kind of attracts attention, which I think is a bad, I would never say that to people who want to, you know, express an opinion about football, a female. But unfortunately, if you did, you're getting piled on no matter what it is. So I'm very quiet. I kind of use it to, because I find it very helpful. I don't know about you guys. It's really useful tool, isn't it?
Yeah.
News. And, you know, I basically thought, well, should I come off it? But I thought, actually, you know what? It's really helpful, especially if you know, you're getting team news and you want to know, it's usually the first place you get that. And also if there's any injuries and things like that. So I'm more of a sort of a lurker, if that's not a too weird, slightly
nothing wrong with that.
Way
it's
of,
good to lurker. That's fine. That's
yeah.
Fine.
So, I mean, I kind of reply to people if they contact me, but, and also you get these quality filters, because I know if I do match the day, I know I'm going to get, you know, shit from it, no matter how good or bad I am. But well, I think have, what What insults me more is, I don't mind if people say, "Oh, you're crap." What annoys me more is when people say it's because you're a woman, and I don't like to hear women. That really hurts me more, because it's so, we all have our favourites, don't we? You know, it's so subjective. So it's kind of like, fair enough, you don't like my style, that's absolutely fair, because I have people who I prefer to listen to, prefer not to. But if it's because I'm a woman, that's really insulting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got used to hearing female commentators from when I don't really understand why it's such a novelty, because Ann Jones was doing commentaries on Wimbledon tennis when I was a little lad. Rachel Hayhoe Flint, the doyen of women cricketers, was doing cricket commentaries.
I just think football's different, isn't it? Unfortunately, it is.
Unfortunately, there is more of a close shot element. But yeah, that's where Jackie Oatley blazed the trail for people like you.
Yep, she pretty much took a bullet for people like me and Vicky. Unfortunately, she's spoken about it loads of times. She had a terrible experience. I don't think the BBC handled it particularly well. And she had, tabloid newspapers going round her mum's house harassing her, saying, is she gay? You know, things like that. I mean, that was a long time ago, and you'd hope that doesn't really happen so much now.
Amazing. But, it's like people like you and Jackie and Vicky live in that Harry Enfield sketch.
Yeah. Women.
Yeah. When's gone? Where's the bloke? Come on, love.
Yeah.
It's not a sketch, is it? That's a gritty docudrama, yeah, that Harry Enfield and Paul White.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I think for Jackie in particular, she was like, the spotlight was on her, which is why I feel, again, very lucky that the BBC have handled me and Vicky. It's like, we've come up together. So it's kind of, we take the flak. Although I feel like she's taken much more than me because of various things. But I feel like Jackie was kind of, it was just her. And it just like a, yeah, the spotlight on her, and that was it. And I think that was, you know, she's got thicker skin than me, and my God, she needed it.
Yeah, she's a tough black country lassie. So she can take it from that part of the world. Kev, I mean, criticism is not merely something that's thrust the way of certain genders. It crosses all boundaries. I have to deal with it. I'm sure you get it now and again, because once you're tagged an expert, I've not been tagged it, but you have that tag of European football expert, which brings its own pressures. And the I think you'll find brigade are difficult to avoid at times like that.
Yeah, generally, I've been very lucky with that. I think what you tend to find with the kind of European stuff is there's a gang of people who are kind of into that stuff. So they're watching Lille against Lorient on Friday night. Not many people are, but they are. And so if you're one of them and you're as passionate about that kind of thing as they are, I've been very lucky in the sense that people are interested, and they kind of, once they realise that you do watch the stuff and you're not just saying, oh yeah, Lille against Lorient, yeah, I've seen all of their stuff. Oh, who's the left back? Oh, I don't know. You know, once, you know, they realize it's legit, they're nice. And the Bundesliga crew are really nice. So there's lots of people all around the world who are into Bundesliga stuff. And I think once you're all part of that tribe, I think people are very cool. So I'm really, really lucky in terms of how my social stuff, because I'm on Twitter a lot, and I'm very fortunate because I know that people get a lot of horrendous stick, and I can't begin to imagine like the kind of stuff that Jackie and Robin and Vicky get. I do see it, and it's hideous. I mean, a lot of the reporters, very, very good reporters, who get absolutely hammered on Twitter all the time, and it's outrageous, really. And I think I just kind of, because it's quite niche what I do generally, I kind of fly under the radar quite a bit. But I do see what those guys get, and it's hideous. And it's a real shame, because actually Twitter could be so positive. I mean, from a work point of view, for me, it's like having all of the papers out in front of me at once. It's like somebody delivered Marca, delivered AS, delivered Corriere del Sport to me. You know, all of that stuff's like perfect, like built's there. It's all there. So that's a massive part of my job, being able to see what people are saying all over Europe You know, I couldn't do it without it, really, in
That's
a way.
The point, actually, languages. I don't know whether you, your German must, I guess, be pretty good.
No, not really. It should be better. But what tends to happen is, so I've been going over there, obviously, for 6 years. And what would happen is I went over with the best of intentions. I was like, right, I'm going to learn German. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And what would happen is you would say it to a German person. You'd do your best German. They'd reply in English every time. Every single time. And so I must admit, I've got a bit lazy with it. But you pick up bits, but Google Translate is terrific.
Oh, I remember the most ridiculous phrases from my German. It was like, if the weather had been good, we would have played tennis. It's like the pluperfect adjunctive.
Oh, yeah.
Sentences yeah. sticking red from school. Wenn das Wetter schön gewesen wäre, würden wir Tennis spielen. I was just, why?
There's a whole world of pain in there. Yeah. There is.
Why does that stupid sentence stay in your head? You know, it's, you know, Lumpy ist ein Hund is fine, you know. I'll take that, but why do I have to remember pluperfect subjunctives? That's not going to help me.
Was that Zigzag you used to have, Dan? Did you have the Zigzag books in German?
No, I don't remember Zigzag. Our German teacher at school was very strict. He used to throw the books at you.
Right.
When your book. Well, if you got a good mark, he would gently lob the book back to you from the class. Poor Mark, and it was frisbee. Yeah. That, and if it cut your neck, it cut your neck.
My mum used to get the board rubber thrown at her. She was a chatterbox, my mum, so she always used to get board rubbers and things like that.
We had a maths teacher who had the board rubber, and he also had a black dog underneath his desk. So he'd throw the board rubber, it would land perfectly in your groin, and then the dog would come snarling out from behind the desk and come and retrieve.
Wow.
Where did you go to school?
You know those salt mines you were talking about earlier?
I'm interested to know, Dance, what sort of reaction you get on social media and what form does it take? And also, does it depend on what team you're doing or what, like, how high profile it is?
I'll be honest, I'm fairly fortunate in the sense that I don't get that much criticism in the sense of, you know, having people sort of saying, get off your crap, you know, what on earth are you doing on the wireless sort of thing. And there's not much tribalism that occurs anymore. That's one interesting thing, actually, about becoming a commentator. Kev, I know you're a Liverpool fan. And Robin, obviously Oxford, you know, it's kind of your thing. And with me being Birmingham, for the first few years of my career, I was working in local radio and I was able to be partisan for the benefit of a local radio audience. And
yeah,
you'd have had that, of course, Kev with Cheltenham and you, Robin, with Oxford. But then when I went to TalkSport in 2004, and I was only a reporter at the start there, I suddenly realised if I was being sent to watch Villa or Birmingham, who previously I had to be partisan, you know, even Villa, you know, I had to do Villa commentaries and be partisan towards a team that's my natural enemy.
Yeah.
So it's funny how that conditions your brain so that years down the line, the hatred is not as, it's not as binary, that it's not as tribalistic, whatever. I still don't want Villa to win anything.
But, yeah.
But I don't wish ill will the way that some supporters do. So the criticism I was saying this to Guy Mowbray, I get more criticism when I'm presenting programmes than when I'm commentating on football matches.
That's interesting.
So maybe that's an opinion thing, because you give your opinion more as a presenter on a talk sports show, whatever it may be. Whereas when I'm commentating, I'm just describing the action. I've always found that the Twitterati are more on your case. With the, like I said with Kev before, the I think you'll find brigade, they're picking you up on every minutiae of everything you're saying. So I've got lucky, Robin, really in many regards, but you never get complacent. I don't think you never think.
No.
If you think you've cracked it, then that's the start of the slippery slope. You just you keep doing your prep the same way. You keep writing down with different coloured pens and you know, you three full pages of full scap, and you turn up at the game, and again by the end of the game most of it, you know, haven't even looked at any more than when you've written it. Everybody's different, Robin, I think, but I'm a 53-year-old bloke, English bloke. I am very lucky in that sense. There are other genders that get criticism, other skin colours that get criticism just because, and it's just ludicrous what I read sometimes that gets thrown certain people's way. So the group that I'm in, if you will, the societal group that I'm in, and what ridiculous privilege that somehow affords me is not lost on me.
Well said.
Yeah. It's the same with me, Dance. I mean, I've had a very, very easy ride, and I'm very, very conscious of that because I know that it could be, you know, a totally different scenario if I wasn't a middle-aged white guy. So I think that's an important thing to be aware of, that we've had a relatively easy ride, whereas a lot of other people haven't.
I would say, but also that, as you said, Dance, that criticism is universal. It's not like, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. You're going to get criticised on Twitter or abused on Twitter, really. That's it.
I mean, but it goes back to what you were saying, doesn't it, Robin, about the fairness of it? Because you don't mind, you know, I might get hammered for, you know, having an opinion about Man United or whatever, or I might say something, you know, vaguely controversial on TalkSport and somebody might have a go at me about that. And that's absolutely fine. I've never had somebody go, oh, you guys are always like this or whatever, or oh, I don't think men should talk about this, you know, whereas, like you say, you'll get it based on the fact that you're a woman, which is ridiculous. You know, you'd rather be criticized on what you say rather than the person who said it. And I, you know, we never get that. So that is where it is a bit different, that dynamic.
It's something that's not going to change, unfortunately, I don't think. Although, as you said, Robin, you use the filters on your social media to get rid of certain words and phrases and epithets that these numbnutsies can't get past, can they? They can't get past using the same old crap. So
it's great. And the mute button's always there as well. You know, I prefer the mute to the block because that means they're still doing it, but no one can see it. I can't see it.
I would always mute rather than block so they can scream into the ether all day long and get no joy from it. Let's move on a little bit, if I may. The whole thing about Borussia Dortmund in the 90s, it was that Paul Lambert European Cup winning, Champions League winning Dortmund side that got you into European football. So they're responsible for the cosmopolitan look to your life these days, because your week is very busy now.
Yeah. So being able to work on the Champions League, which I now am, thankfully, with UEFA, is a dream come true, really, because that was the thing that really used to excite me. I used to love major tournaments because you know, back in Italia 90, that was kind of the first one I really properly watched, I guess. But the one where I was obsessed was USA 94, which is mad because we didn't get to watch half of it. So mum and dad had to, on the VHS, tape every game. I would watch every game, had the sticker albums, wanted to know all about the players. I thought the kits were brilliant. Just USA 94 really kind of reinforced it in my head. But Champions League nights were great because they were so rare for us. We you know, I couldn't stick on, you know, Bochum against Mainz. We didn't have that capability. So you would get Juventus against Dortmund, or you'd get these amazing games and be like, wow, this is so different to what we normally watch. And in many ways, it isn't different, but the kits are different. The language is different. The players are different. And so I think I was like knowing about that stuff, whereas other people didn't. I hadn't paid as much attention or didn't know about that stuff. Again, it's the raging ego kicking in again. But that fascinated me. And so that kind of sowed the seed, and it just layer upon layer upon layer. So it's a dream, really, to be able to talk about European football for a living. And it just amplifies and magnifies the stories, because you've got one set of stories in one country, and then you can go to loads of different countries and find loads of different stories. And that's kind of what we all are, really, isn't it? Storytellers. That's the core of everything we do, whether it's through stats or through telling you that this player does carpentry in his spare time or whatever. You know, we're telling stories, whatever they happen to be.
And Robin, with WSL kicking off this weekend as we talk, and with the new broadcast deals that have been brought in, the WSL has never had a better chance, has it? Never had a better chance to expand an audience to a level it's never previously achieved.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because every season they say it's going to be the biggest in the WSL, but this is another level. You know, on the proper channel, BBC and Sky, they've promised they're giving it the proper treatment. You know, the whole touch screens and the analysis, it's going to be absolutely brilliant. Yeah, no, I really hope people buy into it. I think it's going to, you know, it's going to take a while for that to translate to sort of bums on seats, because that's the main thing. You want people to go and watch it, and it's a really nice experience. So, you know, I've got a nearly 1-year-old, and I think probably I'll take him to a women's game first, just because the atmosphere is a little bit, you know, better. And or even actually, having said that, maybe a non-league game, because you can run about a bit more, can't you? Change ends, things like that. It's a little bit more practical. But yeah, I think it's gonna be huge. What's going to be really interesting is that because the players are going to have a lot more publicity and hopefully a lot more eyes watching them, are they going to be able to cope with that? You know, they're going to have thick skin themselves. You know, they it's interesting because the England players came in for a bit of criticism over the last World Cup occasionally. And I think they were taken aback a bit because it's not something they've experienced in their careers. You know, obviously men's players get it every day. it's going to be immense. It really is, because we've got top world-class players from this country and from abroad who are going to be playing. And it's, yeah, I honestly can't wait.
And playing in, you know, some of the major stadiums are being used as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a debate on that, because you think, is it better to maybe fill a smaller stadium, you get the atmosphere a little bit more, or is it good to have it in, like Everton are playing City at Goodison Park, and you've got the Emirates as well this weekend? So I don't really know the answer to that, but I think the fact that they're, and Leicester City have committed to, I think most of their home games going to be at the King Power. I don't know. I mean, personally, I think it's, I don't know how I'd feel as a player kind of playing in a really, you know, Premier League standard stadium, but perhaps not the crowd sort of, because I mean, you've both commentated in stadiums that are a little bit like a 30,000 seat stadium, but there's kind of 3,000 people there. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've just got used to the feeling of not having to commentate in a completely empty stadium.
Absolutely.
You know, which was the deal for a year or so. But it still means we have to travel up and down the country, and we still have to deal with service stations at stupid o'clock in the morning. And that's a part of the commentary life that many people don't really register. The idea that, yeah, you finish, like I was in Huddersfield last Tuesday, you finish at 10 o'clock. I had to be back home here to do a Planet Rock show the next day for breakfast. So it meant a 4-hour drive. And so there you are at 1:30 in the morning, and your car's taking you home. And you've stopped at, I don't know, Gloucester Services. And it's you and the cashier, and that's it. You know, and you're looking to see if there's anything just to wake you up, just to get you home. Service stations and football commentators, they're a wonderful combination at 1:30 in the morning, I
think. That is a big topic in the press room, isn't it? Best services. And also I find on night games, why is it every time you're turning on the motorway is shut, there's some cones out, there's no one doing any work, but it's just always, you're like, you just die a little inside, don't you?
It was a weird kind of gear change a few years ago when I started doing the Bundesliga World Feed stuff, because we were going out to Germany every weekend. And so you'd suddenly have this kind of really weird thing where, so sometimes I'd go out on a Friday morning to do a Friday game and a Saturday game and then come back. But sometimes you'd go, when we first started, it was literally a flight in the morning on Saturday to Cologne, do the game, have a quick drink, come back on the late flight. But then they stopped the late flights on a Saturday. So that meant we had to then go across to Dusseldorf and get literally the 6 a.m. flight on the Sunday morning out of Dusseldorf. So you ended up going to, you ended up going to bed kind of about 11. You get up at 4 and then you get on the plane. And that just became a routine kind of week after week after week. And I remember the hotel that I stay in Dusseldorf is a very nice hotel called the Maritim. We're very lucky that we get put up in these. But they said, oh, Mr. Hatchard, we've put you up in the, we've put you up in the suite. And so they put me up in this suite because they'd had a late change and they just were able to give me an upgrade. And you just thought, should I stay up to enjoy this? It's kind of, you're in this suite. I'm here for like 5 hours. This is completely pointless.
Pop and the shower on your cap own. On.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah, exactly. Thought I'd do a quick shave, you know, the Corby trouser press, do all of that. So yeah, it's a bit of a crazy kind of living, isn't it, really, that you're doing all this kind of weird travel and people think it's really glamorous. It really isn't a lot of the time. But what was quite cool is that it's quite a small team of us that do it. So you hang out with the guys kind of week in, week out, and it's, you know, you do all the same crazy trips and all that stuff. So the social side of it's been a lot of fun. But if you try and mix the social side with 4 hours sleep and then a 6 o'clock flight, it doesn't always work particularly well, I have to say.
No, I've seen members of the TalkSport team suffer who think they can burn the candle at both ends at World Cups and struggle the next day. Robin, have you been to an international tournament? I mean, you've done women's World Cups. What about men's World Cups? Have you covered that yet?
Well, I did a few at the Euros this season. A few at the Euros in the summer, but yeah, they were all off tube in Manchester, which suited me fine because of the baby. But no, I haven't done a major men's tournament.
What about women's tournaments then? What about the vibe that goes around there? Because obviously it's a completely different press pack, isn't it, to what would go to a men's tournament?
Yeah. Again, it's, you know, you get the kind of fraternity, don't you? The kind of women's football and the you know, you've got the main people and it's great. I did the World Cup in France in 2019 and it was great fun because everyone was so lovely. But I've got to say, I've never been so, well, actually I have been tired now. I've had a baby. I know what that means now, but, you know, it's pretty intense, isn't it? You know, the traveling, because you're basically, you're doing a game and then you're traveling somewhere else. You're never really in the same place for more than one or two nights. And it's pretty exhausting. And you don't want to complain, obviously, because it's an incredible privilege to do tournaments. But, you know, then you're worrying about, oh, who am I doing next? Is it, you know, is it China? That's going to be tricky. You know, need a, you know, brain needs to be engaged for that one. You know, it's, but... Well, I just love learning. I love the prep, actually. I don't know about you guys. I love learning about players that I don't know about and, you know, history of clubs and things. I really enjoy it.
That's where, when I used to do Europa League games, and I used to do like a Thursday night at for UEFA in Wimbledon. So you do a 6 o'clock game and an 8 o'clock or 8:05 game back to back. And you didn't, you know, ask to do certain teams. The year when Birmingham were in the Europa League, I was given a Birmingham game or two at times, but I certainly didn't ask for them. It was very generous when I was given the chance to commentate on my lot in Europe. But by and large, you're given... I mentioned Ventspilsen Heerenveen, one classic example. And I'd never laid eyes on either team before in my entire life. And suddenly there you are commentating on them, you know, in Latvia or Holland, wherever it was. But the great thing is your knowledge of players that then come to play in the UK or come to play for higher profile clubs or play at major tournaments. Tyson, who's the Brazilian, used to play for Metalist Kharkiv, scored one of the greatest volleys ever in the Europa League. And I thought I was the only person that had ever seen it, apart from the people who were inside the stadium, because I did commentary on it. And then he turns up and starts playing for Brazil. At major tournaments, and I had that knowledge of having seen him play and knowing what he was about. Absolutely invaluable, Robin, that. Absolutely invaluable to what it lends me somewhere down the line when you least expect it.
One of the gigs that was actually really useful for me that I used to love doing was the Youth League. Doing the UEFA Youth League was absolutely brilliant because I saw Joao Felix, I saw Ruben Diaz, I saw all of these guys, Patson Daka, who's just signed for Leicester. Mm. I saw him banging goals for Salzburg the year they won it. And so you'd watch these games and you'd be commentating on these games, and it is harder to find stuff in the youth league. There's no question about that. But when you do, you're like, oh, great. You know, tremendous. You can kind of bring that into your commentary. And then you see these guys actually in pro football a few years later. And it's terrific because, oh, well, I did see him in the youth league and I knew he was a good player, you see. So you could kind of drop all that stuff in there and pretend that you spotted João Félix.
We all want that on our CV. You know, I saw him first.
Yeah,
absolutely. Listen, we're running short of time, guys. I just wanted to ask one final question about what's the next step. What's obviously, Robin, we mentioned the WSL kicking in. So you're going to be dividing your time between... Mm. The commentaries that BBC offer you there, plus match of the day duties. So, you know, a bit more live football coming up for you.
Yeah. So on Saturday, we'll be going to Goodison Park for the big launch, BBC One. You know, I feel it's really exciting, but it's a lot of pressure. You know, you want to do a good job. You want to, you know, bring the audience in, you know, and hopefully it will be a good game. Because, you know, it's still... Even though I hate people talking about, you know, growing the game for women, I think that's, you know, they've got enough to think about, you know. But I do feel like it's important that the product is really good, so we get people watching, you know, a lot more. I mean, I think, yeah, as I say, there are a lot of crap games in the Premier League, you know, but people don't really talk about them. So but if there's a crap women's game, it's like, you know. But anyway, yeah, no, it'll be doing a bit of live WSL, and then, yeah, match the day. And yes, while baby is still quite young, won't be being sent to Newcastle or to Burnley. Usually it's around the vicinity, Midlands, sort of. We go to Watford a lot, basically.
Well, that's nice. I mean, that's holistic, you know, processing from management, that they know not to...
They've been great, honestly. They've been very, really so supportive. So, yeah, no, again, just feel very fortunate.
Well, that's good to hear. Obviously, Kev, you've got a young family yourself. So, you talk about travelling... to and from Germany. I know that doesn't happen quite so much anymore, but your wife has obviously been there to look after your son and daughter when you're not around.
So she spent 6 years saying you're not home enough, and now she's like, you're home all the time. Please leave. please go away. So all of the programs she normally watched while I'm away, she hasn't been able to watch any of those. Because the other part of it as well in the pandemic has been, and I think people don't necessarily realise this, and Dance, you're away at games, and Robin, you're at games as well. But because of the travel restrictions, we've done games in England. We've had to do some of the games from England, and some of them from home, which is an extraordinarily stressful thing when you're thinking this is going out to millions of people, and it's basically based on the internet to some extent. And so there was, I'll admit, a very stressful month or two where I was getting everything set up. But we're in a good place now where I'm able to do that. But at the moment, we just can't go over there. They want to get us back out there. We want to be out there. But at the moment, you can't. But the family thing is a big part of it because, you know, we all know, and we love our jobs. We absolutely adore our jobs. I'm very privileged to do what I do. Absolutely. But for 35 weeks of the year, you're a social ghost. At weekends, you don't exist. Mm. And I turned up to so I had a very rare Saturday off last week, and I turned up to a family do, and they looked at me as if, now that's got to be a cardboard cutout she's brought or something like that. Like, because you just don't turn up to stuff, which, you know, is a acceptable cost of what we do. But it goes back to that whole people think it's really glamorous and think it's like roses all the time, whereas actually some of it is quite a weird existence, to be honest.
There's a reason, folks, why this show is audio only, because, you know, glamour and me got mixed. I'm not necessarily speaking for my two colleagues on this particular episode.
Oh, you can speak for me. That's fine.
But yeah, glamour and football commentary do not mix. It's yeah, your social life is gone, effectively. And then when you have a child, Robin, Kev, you know, it evaporates.
Yeah, your sleep as well. So yeah. No sleep, no social life. But, you know, it's all good. It's all good. It's just, I think it's not just people with families dancers. You've got to find that balance, haven't you? Because I know you do your Planet Rock as well, and you know, I'm assuming you see friends occasionally. You do work a lot.
No 2 weeks are ever the same. That's the kind of the mantra I've kind of got used to. No 2 weeks are ever the same. There's always something a little different to throw into the pot. Maybe that's part of its charm, I don't know.
What is lovely about the kids at the age they're at now, so they're, well, my daughter's just turned 12, my son's 7, they are so into the Bundesliga. It's absolutely hilarious. So they watch the games, they watch the highlights show every week.
Yeah, wait a minute, they've been doing your homework for you as well.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That people thought that was a mock video. That was genuine. They actually do all my prep for me. But my daughter, if people's pronunciations aren't on point, my daughter will tut and she'll go, oh, it's Joshua, something like that. She'll like, yeah, they're quite hot on the pronunciations now. My son did a perfect Greuther Fürth the other day and I was very, very proud. So they're massively, I haven't really pushed them into the football and it kind of came a lot later with him. My daughter was into it from very early on, but we're going to, we've been to Wembley a few times and they always really, really enjoy that. So yeah, that's been a really kind of sweet byproduct of the whole thing, that by osmosis they're now Bundesliga aficionados, so that's quite good fun.
God, if I started talking about pronunciations we'd be here for another hour, because that's a whole
that's a 3-hour show, Dan.
Don't start.
God, yeah, Robin's just put her hands in front of her face. It's just, yeah,
don't pull on that thread.
Yeah, you pull on that thread, well, you know, and you start. No, it wasn't Berbatov, it was Berbatov. And suddenly you're going down a rabbit hole you really don't want to go down. But safe to say, when Kev says it, it's right.
As long as I've checked. As long as I've checked.
Well, more to the point, as long as your kids have checked.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're the ones to go to, not me. Go to them.
Kev, Robin, what a delight it's been having you on the Commentator's Curse for this episode. Kev, I wish you continued success with the Bundesliga. Hopefully you get back out there to do games on site in the not too distant, so you can get to see Jude Bellingham being awesome in the flesh.
Oh, what a guy. I mean, I did his game on Friday, the Dortmund-Hoffenheim game. He's 18 and the kid's a leader already and they absolutely adore him. On that yellow wall, he's already a fan favourite. He's going to be an absolute superstar. He really is. Yeah.
Great finish as well for his goal as well.
Oh, yeah.
And Robin, well, WSL, here we go. Good luck with that. And, of course, we'll hear you on Match of the Day periodically and whatnot. And Oxford for promotion this year, finally?
We'll have to wait and see. It's a long season. I've got a good feeling, better depth this season, but we'll have to wait and see. I'm sure there'll be a few bumps in the road. As there always is with Carl Robinson.
Properly on the fence there from Robin Cowan, as it should be. Robin Cowan, Kevin Hatchard, thank you so much for joining us, chaps. They've been our guests on episode 3 of The Commentator's Curse. My name's Ian Danton. You can check out the archive. Episodes 1 and 2 are there where you found this particular episode. And we'll be back soon with episode 4 with another couple of commentators that inhabit the weird world that we all live in. This has been The Commentator's Curse. Thanks for listening.